The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson and Sean Martin, PGAtour.com, friend of the show, regular contributor here on the podcast, joining us also from the center of all the PGAtour.com conspiracies. Sean Martin, how are you doing?
That greeting gets me every time. I can't tell if someone's ripping off one of your toenails or if you're kicking off a podcast.
I punch the air as I say it.
I jump every time.
How you doing, man?
Great. Now that I'm here with you two fine gentlemen.
This felt like a good time to check back in with you. Obviously, the GOAT was not able to get it done and defend his 2014 title at Memorial. But
I didn't know Matthew Wolf was in the field, but, honestly.
But I also give Sean Martin some I give Sean Martin a little piece of the Patrick Cantlay stock as well, because I feel like you also have been with this podcast host over here in terms of beating the drum for him for a while. And you know, some of that might come from pedigree. We referenced you in the last show as we were trying to figure out where he stood among the amateurs. And so in the wake of Patrick Cantlay's Memorial win, you know, what are some of the things that are standing out to you in terms of not necessarily what you saw from him in the specific tournament, but sort of what we are seeing in Patrick Cantlay, a star on the rise?
Yeah, I think honestly the Memorial is kind of just a sense of, you know, finally he got that second win. You know, he won at Shriners, and obviously he's had to wait much longer than we thought he would have because of, you know, especially the back injury that kept him out for years. I mean, there was a time where he might not play golf again, it looked like. And then, you know, he wins Shriners, nice event, get that first one off your back. But, you know, Alan Shipnuck tweeted it on Sunday that it just feels so wrong for Patrick Cantlay to have one PGA Tour win, and especially, you know, 2017, yeah. He makes it to the Tour Championship in like 12 starts, has a really solid 2018, and then this year he was a top 10 in like more than half his starts, top 10 in the first two majors, and so it's just like, you know, finally. And then for it to be at a class event like Muirfield Village Memorial, where you have a good winners list, you get to greet Jack off the 18th green, and apparently he's, you know, got a little bit of a relationship with Jack Nicklaus, but it just, it kind of fits for Cantlay to win this event because, and then they referenced it a lot, but in 2011, he won the Nicklaus Award as a top player in college golf. He got to meet Jack Nicklaus, get the award from him. A couple days later, he qualifies the U.S. Open. He was low aim at the U.S. Open, and then a week later, he shoots 60. So, like, when he was at Memorial in 2011 to get that award, he was, like, just in the midst of that run of establishing Patrick Cantlay as, like, almost an unprecedented amateur of like a guy who we hadn't seen the likes of in a long time. And then in the 8 years since, so much has happened that it was nice for it kind of to come full circle and him to get that trophy.
What was his pre-college pedigree, Sean? That's the thing we were discussing. Cause I mean, obviously in college he was awesome and that's easy to sort of find data on, but what did he do in like amateur golf before UCLA?
Yeah, so he was good. I mean, he was playing like the big AJGA events, playing those majors, but there was another school in California that he wanted to go to, and they didn't offer him a full ride, and so that's how he wound up at UCLA. So he was a guy that there were some size concerns. He didn't hit it super far. He was a little bit small. So he was a guy who everyone kind of knew was good. I mean, to go to UCLA, it's a strong program. You're obviously a good player, but it wasn't like, you know, speed where it was like Oklahoma State or Texas, you know, contending tour events, 16, everyone wants this guy. It was, he didn't get to go to his first choice. And then really kind of, even in 2010, before he started his college career, he made it to the semis of the USAM. That's kind of where I first got keyed in on him, because it was a really kind of star-studded semifinal group. And then but with Patrick Cantlay, it was kind of like, who's this guy? And a little bit of surprise. He's just coming to his freshman year. You know, maybe it's just a guy who got hot. But then he pretty quickly established himself, because by the end of that college season, he was the player of the year.
Was that the Chambers Bay USAM?
Yeah, so your semifinalists, you had Byung-Yoon Ahn, who was actually going for back-to-back USAMs. And then it escaped me who it was. Oh, Peter Uihlein and David Chung, who were the 1 and 2 ranked amateurs in the world. So you had the defending US amateur champion, the top two amateurs in the world, and then this kid coming into his freshman year at UCLA.
Well, and the thing that you and I talk about is the, was it 11, the Aaron Hills USAM?
Yeah, where he was runner-up to Kelly Kraft, which that was almost kind of a surprise. I mean, Kelly Kraft has turned into a PGA Tour player, has had his card for a few years, but that one, Cantlay fell behind early. And it's funny, it kind of shows his demeanor. He's very level. And I, being from California, one of my friends from childhood worked for his instructor, Jamie Mulligan, so I kind of gotten to know Patrick and his family, the teacher a little bit, but like 5 or 6 holes in, I think, maybe a few more, Patrick was like 3 or 4 down, and I'd hear this voice behind me go, there's a lot of holes left. And I turn around and it's Patrick, like just talking. I guess he was talking to me, but just, I was like, oh, I was like, it's kind of a, you're 4 down over the USAM. Like, but he was pretty chill about it. He did make that comeback, but ultimately, the 16th hole, that short par 4, that Brooks birdied, and yeah, that's what he won. He'd made a mess of that. It was very uncharacteristic. He laid up, it was drivable, laid up with an 8-iron into a bunker and just made a mess from there and basically lost the tournament there.
I love that. I love you're in your head talking trash to Patrick Cantlay at a USAM, by the way. Bro, well, you're 4 down.
I was flabbergasted. I didn't know what to say. And I was like, yeah, sure. Yeah, there are. And I was like, he just wasn't fazed at all and just had such supreme confidence in his ability that he was like, that he wasn't a cluster. He's like, I'll make my comeback.
So the supreme confidence means that Patrick Cantlay, in his head, fully understands that he belongs in the space where he's at. And so, like, pitch to you the primary sort of conversation point that we talked about afterwards is, do you think that Patrick Cantlay is a star or a superstar?
I mean, I think the only thing that's going to separate him from being a superstar is that he is super low-key. So he doesn't really do social media. You know, he's not very, he's kind of like Brooks. He's not huge, you know, he doesn't live for press conferences. He's very smart, and he's got a kind of, you know, understated, witty sense of humor to him. And he gives good answers when he's asked good questions, but also, he's giving me a hard time about this, but when I ask bad questions, but you get no answer in return, which he's probably deserved. But he's just a guy that, he's not going to be a superstar probably, because he just doesn't, that's not his style. He just wants to play good golf, rack up wins, rack up a resume, but he doesn't really care about doing social media. Doug Ferguson had a great lead in his column after Memorial that the PGA Tour, my employer, a great organization, they asked the winners to do a selfie after they win, just kind of explaining what the win means to them. And it's a really popular post and does well because fans like to hear directly from the player. And like Patrick was like fiddling with the phone and trying to hold it right. His head was in the frame while also pushed the record button. And someone goes, oh, your first selfie. And he just like kind of rolled his eyes. So that's just to kind of give a sign of a very old soul.
I would that's love. Hilarious. Yeah. I was going to say, I want to see a young star who is trying to be forced, because he's not really young, right? Are we talking about 27?
Okay. Yeah, but he's,
I mean, as I get older, that gets younger.
Yeah, that's true. he's young in the sense of like, this was only, I think it was like his 87th PGA Tour start. I mean, we talk about like, I don't know, the Spieth and the JT and like Ricky Fowler's had 250 starts on the PGA Tour. And like, you look at Cantlay and it's like, he missed 3 full years. Like, he did not play at all. And so we talk about him being 27, but in terms of like his resume, he's sort of like 25 or 24 in terms of how many events he's played.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it apparently was, there were questions about whether or not he was going to play again.
That's crazy.
Mm.
Yeah.
As we start to turn our attention towards the U.S. Open coming up in a little bit, will you be on site, Sean?
I will be. Con and I will both will be. It'll be a redux of just the fun times from Bethpage Black.
So that means that y'all will be working out together, getting a good morning session with Joey D, getting your mind right for the day, and
box jumps on the beach, baby.
Yeah, we've been giving our wives a hard time because apparently the hotel is located on the beach, so morning beach runs, plyo workouts, so we get that high intensity, get our explosiveness up.
All right, we will probably have a lot of more time to sort of break down and preview some of the intricacies of it, but just to pitch to you, Sean, like the for Pebble Beach, when you're looking at, you know, what the course does in terms of favoring a certain type of player, it's a historic course. We've got the USGA factor, which is always should be taken into consideration, but like, is there something that you're looking for in terms of like a bomber, for example, isn't going to have the advantage that they're going to have at another course? Are you looking for like a certain statistic in strokes gained when you're looking for your winner? Like, what kind of player do you think is or isn't going to have some advantages at Pebble Beach?
And the biggest thing, I think, is how small the greens are. So they're the smallest on the PGA Tour. Then you take the firmness that you're going to get in California in June. And so in 2000, the field hit less than half the greens. They hit 48 greens. There hasn't been a lower greens hit percentage at a tour event since. In 2010, they only hit 51% of the greens. So there's two ways to look at it. You're either going to have a super elite ball striker like Nicklaus or Tiger win because they can still hit those small greens, or it kind of turns into a putting and chipping contest because if everyone's missing greens and nobody's hitting them, then everyone's chipping and putting. So I think you could have a guy scramble his way to U.S. Open just because it is so hard to hit those greens. And frankly, but the other side of it, I'm kind of talking on both sides of my mouth, is it's so hard to make putts on that Pebble Beach because there's so much break in those greens, and the Poana gets bumpy. And so you're hitting these like ticklish little 3-footers that you're starting outside the hole. And so to be honest, I don't know. I don't think that, I mean, length isn't going to be a huge asset. So it's not going to be like Bethpage where like Brooks and DJ, or they might duel it out just because they're both really good, but it's not going to be this one where only the bombers have a chance. It's definitely much more democratic. But at the same time, it's always been class winners and class ball strikers that win at Pebble Beach. They've had 6 majors there, 5 have been won by Hall of Famers, pretty much all guys who are known as ball strikers like Tiger and Nicklaus and Watson. And now Tom Kite was a wedge wizard, but then Lanny Watkins won a PGA there, and he's a ball striker. So I don't really know, but I think it'll definitely be more wide open than Bethpage. I would probably lean towards ball strikers.
Spieth's going to win, isn't he?
I mean, are we there yet with the ball striking? I mean, he fits the scrambler aspect, but it's just so hard to make putts there. Like, you're not going to do what he did at Bethpage. The greens were so flat. He putted great because you put Jordan Spieth on flat greens and he'll make everything. But I just don't think – I know Tiger one putted a bunch, but you can't get on a crazy putting run there, I don't think.
No, but the way you presented that, I was thinking more about like it's the whole thing where if everybody's going to miss greens, then pick the best scrambler. And he, I mean, that's kind of what he's doing right now. Like, again, like the last 3 weeks or his last 3 tournaments have been, and it's something that I've talked about, it's been smoke and mirrors. It's been putting. It's been chipping. It chipped in like 5 times at Memorial.
It was only like 3. It was not 5.
It felt like 15, but
he did Memorial. It was the ball striking is getting better. He was making progress, I think, as the week went on.
Agree.
There is a little more width at Pebble, which helps.
He still finished 62nd in approach shots at Memorial.
Yeah,
it's not good. It's not good. But I don't know. You were sort of talking me into it with the scrambling and the chipping thing there.
Yeah, but I mean, you do look, I mean, like DJ was basically going to win that thing. I mean, he just gagged it at the end in 2010 just because he was inexperienced. But I don't know. I as I went through that whole diatribe, I think I'm leaning more towards just class ball strikers.
Yeah.
Because the greens are so small, you don't have to go with flags. You just have to hit middle of greens, you know, 20-foot birdie putt. So which I think is great for Brooks because Brooks has that discipline. He proved it at Shinnecock to just hit in middle of greens and be patient and take your chances when they come, but not force things. So even though it's a shorter course, there's also like no reason to believe, except for the fact that it'd be insane if he won, to think that Brooks won't be up there again.
Well, who is that class, just off the top of your head, handful of the best ball strikers right now in golf?
I'm thinking of one guy, especially a guy where it helps if no one's making putts, it definitely helps him big time. The man from Japan.
Hideki.
It fits perfectly for him.
Who else? Come on, man.
Hold on, I'm looking up. I mean, Kayla's up there, Hideki, honestly.
Hideki's slowly working his way back into form. Tweeted today, him and Rory, the only two guys who are top 15 in both strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained approach. Cantlay's also in the top 30. This is like Patrick Cantlay perfectly. He's the only guy with Adam Scott who's top 30 in all four strokes gained stats. So like there's nothing you think of as like, you think of DJ's bombs it, Brooks bombs it, Steve great putter. Let's say there's nothing you think of as like amazing with Patrick Cantlay. He's just really good at everything, and that's kind of Patrick Cantlay in a nutshell.
So strokes gained on approach shots, here's your top 10. Stenson, Sergio, who's missed seven straight major cuts. Keegan, Hidex is fourth. Rory's fifth. JT, Kuchar, Jason Kokrak, Patrick Cantlay, Emiliano Grillo, and then Tiger and Koepka are 11 and 12. It's a group. It's a crew. DJ is 17.
Where's Rory?
He's fifth.
That's right.
I don't see Rory winning here. I don't know.
I mean, I'm not. Where are you at with Rory, Sean?
Like personally, professionally.
Both. Let's go personally first. Professionally second.
Professionally, I think Rory's like such an enigma, right? I mean, what is it, like 9 top 10s and 11 starts or something, but kind of backdoored it at Bethpage. I think that I don't think Pebble's great for him because it's not a place where driver A is necessary and then B really is a huge advantage. So I think that he's handcuffed, right? So I mean, the courses where he's dominated, it's a lot of it's because he's blasting driver at Congressional and at Kiawah, and even at Valhalla, like big golf courses where he could just, I mean, what his driving is on, it's a separator, it's a difference maker, and it's just not, you just can't do that at Pebble.
TPC Sawgrass. Forgot about
true.
That one.
Yeah, I mean, well, it did play a little bit longer this year. In March, it played longer, so that did help. He was able to drive a little bit more. But I don't know. I mean, his open record recently has not been good.
No, he's missed the last three cuts. The last cut he made was Chambers when he tried to, I think he backdoored a top 10 there. He tried to shoot like a 30 on the back on Sunday to win it. But that's when somebody reminded me, didn't Louis Oosthuizen shoot an 80 in the first round and finish like third?
77
in the first round? That's unbelievable.
And then I want to say he shot 29 on the final nine. He like hold out a 120 yard shot for birdie after pitching out of a bunker.
Yeah, that's incredible. Okay, one other thing that I had for you, because I know this is your sort of wheelhouse, is what sectional qualifier stories stood out to you? There was obviously a lot going on Monday. Our boy Shane Bacon didn't get in. That happened a couple weeks ago. But just what stood out to you in terms of guys that qualified for Pebble?
I'm really excited about Colin Morikawa making it. I think I'm excited to see what he does as a pro. Tweeted yesterday when he was 19, he was like in college and he shot 63 on the weekend of a web.com event to get into a playoff. He lost it to Ollie Schneiderjans, but I mean, for an amateur to play the way in the final two rounds is pretty good. The Twitterverse exploded for Luke Guthrie, which is a crazy story. It's been a while now, but like when Guthrie came out in 2012, he went gangbusters, finished second on the web money list, just 10 events, flirted with the top 50 in the world. And then kind of things just progressively got worse. He lost his tour card. kind of sliding down the web rankings. And this season in May, he was outside the top 1,000 in the world ranking. He'd earned just $1,500 on the web.com tour, wasn't getting to events, was kind of, you know, you're starting to think about what's going to, I'm going to lose my web.com tour card. I got to go to Q school. And if I don't do well there, I'm like in Canada, maybe at best. And he's had top 10s in 3 of the last 4 starts. And then he medaled at the Columbus qualifier, which is full of tour fields or tour players. So that one's pretty cool to see, because it's been a pretty, you know, guy who came out with the world on fire, fell off the map, and now is kind of doing the same again. So that's a cool story. Just kind of going down through the fields.
Big Stu.
You don't have as many. Big Stu Hagestad, for sure. Zach Blair, that was another one that was popular with the Twitter sphere. Jokingly tweeted at him that he'll be like the first guy to win the U.S. Open after playing 36 at Cyprus and Paso Tiempo the day before it starts, just because he's known for hitting up famous golf courses. He goes and plays tour events.
Austin Eckroat,
your boy,
my guy, yeah,
pistols firing,
yeah, excited about that.
Wrote a crazy story for the California one. The Shun on U kid is like the third ranked player in college golf this year. Kyle wouldn't have noticed because he only saw Matthew Wolf. But
this is the Arizona State kid. I know this stuff. I got it.
Jeff Shackelford wrote this cool story about one of the kids from the qualifier in California. This Andreas Halvorsen. He's from Norway. He's boys with Victor Hovland. He's playing the Latino America tour, and 2 weeks ago they played an event at Tijuana Country Club, and so he's like, oh, I'm going to play the California sectional qualifier because it's nearby. Just hop across the border. It's easy. Well, it turns out that was 2 weeks before the qualifier. Then last week they were over like on the other side of Mexico. So anyways, he had to like catch a flight. He landed in California at like 1 a.m. Monday, got 4 hours of sleep, played the 2 golf courses without ever having seen them, shot 69, 65 to get in the U.S. Open, and then like was on a plane at 9 o'clock that night to go fly to the next Latino America event.
Wow.
I think people sort of underrate, like, that is so difficult. I mean, we were joking about it earlier. You and I are like a mess if we don't get like 7 hours of sleep, like for, you know, 5 straight nights at like covering this, not just playing. It's like, that's so hard to do. It's insane.
Yeah. The day after majors, like I'm complaining about like the 12th hole that we're playing 18 holes of casual golf. I'm like, I just want to go sit down somewhere. This guy just played 36 holes and the U.S. Open on the line.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Is this the first time that Sean's been on since you beat him up in New York, Kyle?
Hey, is it really a drumming if you gave him like 3 aside and he beat you by 2?
Yes.
It was 2 aside. And Sean's better than I am.
Sean's game is tight.
I handed it to him. There were a couple missed putts that I definitely regret.
Yeah, Sean has many regrets.
We played Glen Oaks, which you might remember is the course where DJ took that ridiculous line over the lake and Spieth had to go out to the right. And that was kind of like Kyle and I. Like, Kyle's just bombing it by me. I'm trying to play like the control game. He was like decimating the golf course.
Dialed in.
Your final pairing at the 2019 U.S. Open in round 4.
Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth?
It's out there. Like I don't know if it's going to happen. Those are the two guys that have sort of, you would look back over the last 5 years of this course in the, you know, regular PGA Tour event and say those guys have had the most success there.
Man, I hope besides listening to this.
Besides Ted Potter.
Hi, Brooks.
Besides Ted Potter, the wizard.
He is Sean Martin. We've got to let him get off to a Pilates class. So you can get that core right. So you can
strength and flexibility are key at my age.
Strength and flexibility.
I've got some Bikram yoga set up for us in Monterey. So looking forward to it.
You can follow him on Twitter at PGA Tour S Martin. Sean, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Coming up on the other side, we'll have our perfect finish for the Canadian Open, and as promised, Canadian Open history lesson next.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that, so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn, while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. Get started today by visiting truegreen.com, because we all love a beautiful lawn, but not all the work that it takes to maintain it. So, you do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn, because they're the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Visit truegreen.com today. That's truegreen.com.
100 years ago, at the Hamilton Golf and Country Club, which, again, as we mentioned, this is a switch for the Canadian Open. The history lesson. Kyle, I'm pulled up next to the fireplace. I've got my evening tea and my after-dinner biscuits. Let's talk golf.
Yeah, this is Ira Glass of NPR, and we've got a good story for you today. My brother does the Ira Glass voice, and like the cadence is hilarious. Like if somebody else does it, it's really funny. Okay, so 1919 Canadian Open at Hamilton Golf and Country Club. I got way too deep into this because nobody cares, but I found it fascinating. There was this dude named James Douglas Edgar, and he won the 1919 Canadian Open by, get this, 16 strokes over Bobby Jones and two other guys. 16 strokes. It was at the time a PGA Tour record, and it still stands. I think two other guys have tied it, but nobody's ever won a PGA Tour event by more than 16 strokes. I can't even imagine what his strokes gain was on the field. I mean, I don't know how we would go back and calculate that. I guess if we've got the record books, we could do it, but just an unbelievable performance. And this guy named Steve Eubanks chronicled Edgar and wrote a book about him back in 2010. And he said those in attendance knew that they had stood witness to history and showed their appreciation with a level of cheering never before heard at a sporting event in Canada. This is at the 1919 Canadian Open. I mean, this is crazy. He won by 16 over Bobby Jones. And so this dude, you're like, okay, like what does his career look like? Like, how did it play out? Well, he goes back and wins the 1920 Canadian Open as well. And then in 1921, he died. And as the story goes, he was apparently murdered.
What?
Yeah. So there was like this, it was weird. Like there's apparently some people said it was a car accident, but there were no witnesses that like saw any cars, and he was just like found on the side of the road. And a lot of the stories are that he was like stabbed.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is somebody who, so Eubanks did this thing. He got, he found a quote from Harry Vardon, who, 7-time major winner, just an unbelievable golfer back in that day. And Harry Vardon said, Edgar, well, I will tell you, I believe this is a man who will one day be the greatest of us all. And that was in 1920, and he died in 1921.
Was James Douglas Edgar Canadian, I guess?
Yeah, I believe so.
And then, so he defends his homeland in 1919, and is Canada still run by Britain at that point?
I don't know. No, James Douglas Edgar was English. He wasn't Canadian.
Wow. And murdered at 21 after stunting on. All right, so if he won by 16 over Bobby Jones, I'm going to guess his strokes gained against the field over under 27.5.
Oh, it was probably like 40. I mean, it's crazy. And there's another great story. This is the last little piece I had on him, but it says Eubanks shared a story of Edgar contacting his regular bookie in October 1920 and wagering $700 on himself that he would be the next Southern Open champion. So he wagers $700. He goes out and beats Bobby Jones again by two, and he only collects 1,000. That was first place money. That would be the equivalent of like Koepka going out and putting down like an $800,000 bet on himself for Pebble, or more than that, actually, like 1.3 mil on himself.
I think we might. I've got lazy suspicions of how he was murdered or why he was murdered now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's other dots there that I'm not like throwing out there.
Out of respect for Doug Edgar, we're not going to dig all the way into that. But that's
fascinating stuff, though.
So if he put $700 on himself, but he won $1,000 first place prize money, he probably made more money on his wager on himself than he did at the tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. 100 years ago.
It's pretty interesting. I love going like really deep into some of that stuff because, you know, guys now are overcovered, but guys back then were undercovered. And you can kind of... I don't know. You can find really interesting tidbits.
All right. What's our stat of the day?
Stat of the day. Last five U.S. Opens. You may have seen this. I threw it out there on Twitter. How many guys do you think have made the cut at each of the last five U.S. Opens?
I think it's four.
Yeah, it's four. But the names on here are like, I couldn't get over what I've just stared at them.
I promise I don't have it pulled up. Let me see if I can do it. Is Louis Oosthuizen one of them?
Yeah, he's one.
Last four U.S. Opens, Louis Oosthuizen. Oh, dang it. I just remember I was stuck on Oosty when I saw it. He gave me the other three.
So ZJ, yeah. Which is hilarious. They've lost the course, but he made the cut. Jim Furyk, which is yes, incredible.
Yes. I mean,
that's unbelievable, right?
Yeah. I mean, not unbelievable in the context of Jim Furyk, but unbelievable in the context of, I mean, what is Jim Furyk 58?
No, he's not 58.
Is Jim Furyk 71?
He's 49.
He's 49. But in the context of golfer at his age with at this point in his career, where, you know, to be on this short list, still stunning.
Yeah, and the fact that like he's not even playing in a lot of the other majors. Like he hasn't played the Masters the last 2 years, wasn't in the Open Championship the last 3 years. And he goes, so 14 at Pinehurst, he goes T12, T42 at Chambers, T2 at Oakmont, T23 at Erin Hills, and then T48 last year at Shinnecock. And, you know, my big deal with that is, like, he's so embroiled in, like, wrestling the Ryder Cup obligations. And we saw that play out, right? Like, he wasn't as successful in the last couple of years because so much goes into the Ryder Cup stuff. That you can't give your game the time it needs, and yet he's still making all these U.S. Open cuts.
He's actually solved. We talk about the Augusta Rubik's Cube. He solved the USGA Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, maybe so. And then the last one is Koepka.
What? Weird. That's the guy who maybe is about to win a third straight U.S. Open.
I know. So I remember in 14, he wasn't really like he wasn't a thing yet. But he played great at Pinehurst, and he was sort of the, like, we remember Fowler and Eric Compton finishing behind Keimer, but then Koepka was like right with them. And for me at the time, cause I was kind of like, I was sort of, I mean, I was into him at the time just because I was into the story. He was transitioning onto the PGA Tour, and you're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. So he goes T4 at Pinehurst, T18 at Chambers, T13 at Oakmont. And then first and first at Erin Hills and Shinnecock. I mean, that's sick. That's five straight top 20s at U.S. Opens with two wins.
I think he's pretty good.
I think, yeah, he must be. So those are your four guys, the only four guys that have made the cut at the last five U.S. Opens.
And now it's time for the perfect finish brought to you by Amstel Light. We are back here once again projecting what would be the absolutely perfect finish for the RBC Canadian Open. So Kyle, what is your perfect finish for this week?
My perfect finish for this week is Rory taking down Koepka late in the week and Koepka not caring at all and basically just drafting off of Rory like a like a cyclist heading into, you know, the final hill, and beating him by like 25 at Pebble Beach.
I'm going to say that my perfect finish is Dustin Johnson going back to back. After all, before Dustin Johnson, noted Canadian Open superstar Johnny Vegas went back to back. And so I'm going to say that DJ does it again. I'm going to say he wins by 3 strokes again, only increasing the hype as he heads to Pebble Beach. And if we're going to add just a little bit more perfection here, let's just say that at the post-round press conference, when he's discussing his win, he discusses how he really feels like he's found some good swings now that he's made some adjustments in his professional team.
Mm. Did you see Alan Shipnuck's tweet on that?
I did not, but I know that he's parted ways with Claude Harmon.
He said, who's going to get Joey D in the divorce between with Koepka and DJ?
I would also take a Koepka DJ final pairing as a perfect finish.
Yeah, a little Pebble preview. Hey, you know who else went back to back at the Canadian Open in a year that ended in 19?
Is it Doug Edgar?
James Douglas Edgar. Hopefully the next few years play out better for DJ than they did for old Edgar.
And that was the perfect finish, brought to you by Amstel Light. Anytime that you're looking for the refreshing taste with a perfect finish, that's when you're going to grab an Amstel Light. It's good at any time, and especially when you're gathering around with friends after a long round. Amstel Light, it's the absolutely perfect finish. Anything else from the notebook as we put a wrap on the week?
Nope, I'm empty. I'm excited about this Canadian Open. It's a great field. A lot of guys that are really kind of prepping for Pebble. And then I'm pumped about Pebble, man. I'm excited to get out there. I'm always excited to go to majors, but I've never been out to Carmel or Monterey. And I think we're going to get some golf in while we're out there. Should be beautiful. Should be a great U.S. Open. And exciting couple of weeks coming up.
He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter @KylePorterCBS. You can follow me @Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.